I'm here in the studio this morning with Witty Zeiler, writer-director of The Shape of Trees. Good morning, Willie.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And Ricky Witty, executive producer of the same film, who is no stranger to this radio station. You'll recognize Ricky's voice from her former stint on Sunday afternoons here.
Yes. Former. Under my pseudonym.
Yes.
Nobody's going to figure it out.
Okay. Should we leave that unsaid?
Or? Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm just learning that she was the executive producer of the film.
Oh, I just gave myself
title. I'm just kidding. That makes sense. That
okay, let's jump right in. This is a short film. What is the difference between a producer and an executive producer in real life?
Well, okay.
Not when it's your sister.
Right.
When it's
In real life, executive producer is a really broad term that can mean a lot of different things. For a lot of times, it's just somebody who gave money to the film. So when you watch the end of like a Hollywood movie and there's 10 executive producers, a lot of those are people who just like shelved out a couple million dollars and sent it that way to get the title.
Which is what I did for this film.
Yeah.
Okay.
But other executive producer roles can be a lot more hands-on, a lot more involved. I'm trying to think of, you know, sometimes you'll see Steven Spielberg executive producing a film by someone else.
Yeah.
And in those cases, he's probably kind of creative directing it or like making sure that the quality is up to par, if he's going to put his name on it, et cetera. So he'd be more involved in the creative. A producer is someone who's more on the ground, day to day, making stuff happen, actually executing the film. Executive producers, they're not doing that kind of work. They're not like, you know, arranging the calendars, etc. So I will just, I guess, you know what? It's worth clarifying. Ricky produced this thing.
I did produce it.
She made every scene happen, every moment happen, but we didn't really have an executive producer, so why not? You know, like you can be both.
TBH, I was just going off what I thought my credit was in your credits. For the film.
Did I write executive producer on the film?
So.
All right, well, there you go.
We'll have to watch
Let's
it
again. Let's make it official. We'll find out on Sunday at the premiere.
Yeah.
Okay, there we
what
go.
What will Ricky's title be?
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Shape of Trees is a short film, and has anybody seen it yet? Other than the people who worked on it.
No. This will be the first time. In fact, a few of the people who worked on it haven't even seen it. They'll be watching it with us there on Sunday.
And that is, okay, so give the details. Where, when? And how do people get tickets? Go ahead, Ricky.
Sunday at the Little Panda Theater, 6 p.m. Doors open.
Right here in Sandpoint.
Right here in down the block, if you will, at the historic Little Panda Theater.
Okay.
6 p.m. We're just asking for donations if you love art and want to support local filmmaking. Entry is by donation. No set amount. We're just going off the generosity of strangers. Mostly because we had so much of our family and friends involved in the making of this film, that we didn't want to necessarily charge them a ticket price to get in. But if you're feeling generous and you want to help pay for some of the money Willie specifically shelled out for this movie, then we would appreciate it.
Okay. It is a short film.
Yes.
Which is, how short is it? What's the runtime?
Well, we're making an evening out of it.
Yeah, that's true. So the short itself, the kind of main event, is only 16 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a little appetizer, which is a music video that Ricky and I made a couple of years ago now for a local band, Little Wolf, that actually premiered during one of the Shook Twins Giving Thanks concerts at the Panada, the main Panada, a couple of years ago. So we're going to start there, reshow that music video, watch the main short after that with a little Q&A in between. And then lastly, we have a whole bunch of outtakes, bloopers, and like behind the scenes footage. So we're going to end with just a little bit of like goofing off and showing all the bad takes and stuff.
Fun time blooper reel. We'll also do a little speaking in between, sort of the inspiration behind the short film and where it all came from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love a blooper reel.
Everyone does.
Yeah. They're so fun.
I know.
Yeah.
That is the sign to me of a great rom-com, is when there's a blooper reel at the end. Mm. You're just like, yes, give me more. I love it. I do feel like we should shout out, is that what the kids say, to Jamie Witty Zeiler, who is involved in both of these projects as well in a very deep and meaningful way.
My wife Jamie and I co-directed this, and in particular, she was an editor on it. She also worked on the music video, the Little Wolf video that I mentioned, so... Yeah.
Yeah. Big part of this. She'll be there too.
Okay.
I know.
The film, I've seen a trailer for it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you can see
I sent him the trailer. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I guess somebody better tell people where they can find the trailer if somebody's interested.
Oh, yeah. Is that public?
Is that easy to find?
That's a good... I mean, I'm trying to think how you find that. It's on my Vimeo account. There's a QR code on the poster that's hanging outside of the Panda right now. So that was one thing I wanted to make sure and do. If you see the poster and pull up your phone, you'll get linked to the trailer.
Okay. I bet if you go into go to Vimeo.com and search for something like The Shape of Trees, it'll...
There you go. Shape of Trees trailer.
But the film is in black and white, if the trailer is to be trusted.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that expensive to get black and white film in this day and
age? No.
We did shoot it on film, yes.
Yeah, we shot it digitally. And in
just
fact,
checking.
It's kind of the opposite. So when we were getting ready to make it, I had to have a lot of conversations with the cinematographer and the co-writer / lead actor. Mm-hmm. Everyone was kind of asking, like, are you sure you want to do it black and white? And I felt really convicted about it because to me, it's all about not having budget. If we did have budget, I'd be paying a real costume designer. I'd be paying a real production designer to art direct this. I would repaint the walls so that they match the right mood for each scene, et cetera. But because we can't do that, I thought, you know what, we'll make it black and white and then things will at least look cohesive and consistent. Plus, it's just in the tradition of first filmmakers, like early filmmakers. If you watch all the famous directors' early films, they're always in black and white. And I just kind of like that vibe of like, hey, we're just getting started. Let's not get too fancy and let's just keep it, you know, real, clean and simple and black and white. So, yeah, I think it works for the mood of this short.
And what is, I guess you probably don't want to spoil it, but if you can kind of, what's the story? What's the plot of this 16-minute
Let's
short?
Get into it. All right. Yeah. So the story is about the stories that we tell in our lives. You're on the radio. You're probably like me.
I am.
Like, do you find yourself kind of telling some of the same stories over and over throughout your life? You got a couple classics of like something that you went through or whatever, and you're like, all right, I'm about to tell this story again. I'm the same way. And so we wanted to make a short film about that. And so what it is a guy who had one really wild, weird, crazy experience at one point in his life. We don't actually see that experience in the film. What we see is him telling that story over and over throughout his life. He's telling it to pick up on a girl in a bar. He's telling it around a campfire with friends. He's telling it in a job interview. And you kind of piece together sort of who he is and what his life is all about through seeing him retell this story over and over. And so that's what kind of the film focuses on. But the story itself that he's telling is about he's an accountant. And one day he finds out that there's a film being shot in the building that he's working in. So he kind of wanders onto that film set and ends up having this really wild experience where he gets, you know, kind of mistaken identity. He gets pulled in as an extra on the film. Next thing he knows, he's in front of the camera. He's having this interaction with this famous director. And it just was the wildest day of his life. And in fact, it kind of like breaks open his brain and makes him think about the world in a totally different way. And so the rest of his life, he kind of never shuts up about it. And every time he has a chance, he's like, I'm going to tell people about this day where I met this director. And so that's what you see in the short, is him just kind of going on and on about it and never letting it go.
Huh.
Yeah.
The director is?
The director is Terrence Malick.
Okay.
So, you know, he's a real life person. You know, he's got an awesome filmography. He's really acclaimed, especially in kind of like the art world. But it's kind of an elusive figure. Like, he doesn't actually do interviews. There's not even many photos of him somehow. And so we thought it'd be fun to play around with the idea of like, what would it be like if you actually met Terrence Malick and you actually had an interaction with him? And so that's the story that we kind of came up with. And when I say we, the star of the film, Jonathan Hugstad, and I co-wrote this. And so it was a series of like improvisational sessions and playing around with it and just having him kind of tell me the story, or I'd film him telling the story and we'd be like, well, what if then this happened? And to the point where, like, when we started filming this thing last summer here in Sandpoint, it was as if this was a real experience and John's and Jonathan's life. Like it, yeah. Like it was so committed to memory that we sat him down in front of, like, you know, the other actors. And I honestly don't know if some of them realized that this wasn't true.
It felt like they were so in the story.
Yeah.
But that was also part of the thing that we did is not, nobody in the movie is an actor. Like we all just kind of found friends and asked them to be in our short. So there is a really sort of natural charisma to hearing this story for the first time in the background, you know?
Yeah. The film is called The Shape of Trees, and we're talking to Willie Witte Zeiler, the writer-director, and Ricky Witte, a producer or executive producer.
Yeah, TBA.
Yeah, credit to be determined. the film premieres here at the Panada on Sunday at what time again?
6 p.m.
6 p.m.
Well, doors at 6.
Doors at 6.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with come hang out.
A whole, yes, sort of an event surrounding it. You just mentioned, though, that it was filmed here in Sandpoint, at least in part.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All in Sandpoint? Part? How much?
There's one scene that we needed an office building, and specifically, I wanted to see high rise buildings out the window. So we went to Spokane and rented an office there. Yeah. But the rest of the film is all here in Sandpoint. So we filmed inside the Panada. We filmed inside the Little Panada as well. Both we kind of made the bar scene happen there.
Oh, cool.
We filmed in the woods all over the place. We were out in Odin Bay. We were actually running around on the disc golf course in the woods one morning, like at sunrise. Where else did we go?
Well, there's a fire scene, which I actually love this behind the scenes aspect of it. This was late September that we're filming, and we needed a campfire scene. And there was a hard burn ban. Like you could not have a campfire in Sandpoint at the time. And so it was
we were ready to fake a fire. Yeah. We were gonna have just like flashing lights kind of reflecting on people's faces and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had this whole backup plan, and then the day before it rained a little bit, and then the whole day of the shot, it just poured, just like dumped rain all day long until sundown, like 7:30 PM, it just stopped, and we're like, let's have a fire. Everything's wet.
It was a movie miracle.
It couldn't have worked out better. And we were in a safe, controlled environment on top of that. We weren't actually out in the woods, even though the shot made it look like that. Yeah. So it just kind of, and we had a trained fire tender in attendance.
It's
too.
True.
Oh my.
Shout out to Hot Fire Jake. He's in the credits as the pyrotechnician.
Okay. Where'd the idea for this film come from? What's the story of the making of it?
Well, it's a little bit of a mix. It came from a couple places at once. One, the star of the film, Jonathan Hugstad, is a longtime friend of mine, and I've been camping with him plenty of times, and he is very long-winded, tells stories. He's kind of hypnotic. You end up like just listening to him talk for 20 minutes straight and then like, whoa, what happened?
He has a really soothing voice.
And I just thought, one, if we could just capture that in a short film and just convey that, then we're golden. So I knew I wanted to do that. Plus, I didn't mention this, he's one of the funniest people I know. He's just so naturally hilarious. So I had that in mind. And then meanwhile, maybe you could tell the story more specifically, Ricky had an experience as an extra on a Hollywood film. And I always loved that story. And so using the story, you know, as a seed, John and I started kind of doing what I was saying, improvising and playing around and be like, well, what if something like that happened to you? And what if it was on a Terrence Malick film? And just started kind of building from there. But then maybe you tell that story. But the other thing I'll say afterwards is the actual title, The Shape of Trees, because that's a whole other layer. It's where did that come from? That's like the third sort of piece of the puzzle. But you were an extra on a Roman Coppola movie and
right. So he's the other Coppola, Roman, and in the movie, like when you're booked as a background actor, they give you a quick synopsis, and then say bring any applicable wardrobe that you have because especially on a small film, this was a little indie, they don't have a budget to outfit 100 extras.
Where was this?
In L.A.
Hollywood, California.
Hollywood. It was actually in Hollywood, actually.
Wow.
I know, which is rare. Nobody shoots in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But
the Coppolas do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a platinum blonde pixie cut at the time, if mm-hmm. anyone knows what that means. And I, so the directive for the scene was that the movie takes place in the 70s, but they were having a 30s themed cocktail party. So
it's very specific.
Or no, 30s themed Christmas party. It was like so specific.
So you're someone from the 1970s, but you're dressed as you're
as the 30s,
as if you're from the 30s. Okay.
At a Christmas party. And so I did a finger wave in my hair, and most of the extras, it's like 7 o'clock in the morning. Like we get there first so they can just get us out of the way, are in pajamas still. And some have some hair and makeup done. Most of them just have a bunch of clothes and bags that don't work at all because it's a very specific directive. I, when it was extra, I did all my hair and makeup. I was wearing the full outfit that I knew would work for the scene. And I brought like a few accessory changes, but nothing, you know, like I couldn't change my like gown or shoes or anything. It was all just what I had. And so the costume assistant comes by and is going through everyone's bags and going like, this might work, take it to wardrobe. This might work, go to hair and makeup, like telling all the extras what to do. And then she gets to me and she just like stands back and crosses her arms and goes, nailed it.
Uh-huh.
And all the other background actors are like, wait, what? And so I just got to like sit there and knit for 3 hours.
And not only did Ricky get plucked out of the extras, but then specifically got placed right behind
heavily
Bill
featured.
Murray and Charlie Sheen and is in like 8 shots.
Yeah.
Like right behind
them. It's like
them.
Me in this whole party scene.
And so anyways, that story I always love that story. And I always love that it's just exciting to imagine. You're like, you show up as like an extra, but then somebody spots you and you're like, you're perfect. And they pull you on set.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so that kind of became the foundation for the story that the main character tells in our short film. Is like I said, he's an accountant and he kind of wanders onto a film set, but same thing, we kind of took it straight from Ricky's story. We imagine a costume person coming over and being like, hey, you look perfect, come over here. And they like put him right behind the main actor in the film. And so that was kind of the seed of the idea, but building on it from there, like you mentioned, the film is called The Shape of Trees. Idea then got deepened when we learned a little bit about how Terrence Malick actually works. He's a very non-traditional kind of out there artist and director. And he apparently, when you show up on set, he hands everybody just a little index card with a weird kind of abstract phrase on it. Hmm. And it might just be some weird philosophical thing. And the actors don't even know what they're supposed to do with it. Like, they don't know if it's dialogue or if it's just a motivation for them or what. And I just always thought that was so funny and strange. And so then, as you see in our short film, when the main character gets pulled on set, Terrence Malick gives him a card and it says, notice how it's all in the shape of trees. And, well, this is where I won't spoil it, but it's like, come watch. But the way that he processes that statement, notice how it's all in the shape of trees, ends up spinning him off into all kinds of existential, philosophical, almost kind of like, it triggers like a psychedelic trip. He just starts like looking around and being like, it's all in the shape of trees and tripping out about it. So, yeah.
Okay. Ricky?
Yes.
What was the outfit that you wore?
So I had
30s clothes that you could have acquired in the 1970s.
Well,
but
I had a 70s gown. So it was
a
full length black 70s gown from the 70s, but in a 30s style. So it had like a little like dipping neckline, thin straps, drop waist, like very 30s. But it was actually made in the actual 70s. And then just like a stiletto heel with a little rhinestone on the toe, which is very like 30s. They wore shoe clips to like dress up their plain black shoes so they didn't have to buy more than one pair. So it was like reminiscent. And then I had a little fascinator, like a tiny hat that sits on top of your head with a huge ostrich plume.
Oh, cool.
So it's very distinctive in the scene where for 10 minutes I'm standing between the two stars, fake talking and fake drinking my martini.
Yeah.
The film is?
It's called The Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan III. It is actually, this is why this came up again. Uh-huh. It's currently on HBO Max, or Max now they call it.
Yeah.
And so I brought this up to the family because I
have that one.
They
I'll have to watch it.
Released it in theaters for one weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone, shout out to LA peeps, mm-hmm. anyone who knows the Lemleys, it's the little independent theaters in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there because it was there for 2 days, and there was one other person in the theater when I saw it, and it was only there for 2 days. And that was the only release it ever got, as far as I know. And mm-hmm. so to find it on HBO, I was like, oh, wait, people can actually watch this movie I'm in. I never got to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a family book club. And at book club one week, a few months mm-hmm. ago, I mentioned this. And then I retold that story because most of my siblings hadn't heard it. And then I got a call from Willie a few days later, going,
I was like,
I
tell
have
me
this
that
idea.
Story again and tell uh-huh. me everything. And I literally was writing it down because I was like, this is good. Like,
yeah.
this could
yeah.
be a script. Like, this is so funny and weird and exciting. So, yeah.
The movie that we're actually talking about, though, is called The Shape of Trees. We're not talking about the movie no. that Ricky was in.
Yeah.
It's
a funny movie. It's a weird one.
Uh-huh.
It was part of Charlie Sheen's big comeback push. Back in the day. And Roman Coppola is just a weird director anyway.
Okay.
If anyone's seen the Very Murray Christmas on Netflix, that's a Roman Coppola
I have.
Feature.
Yeah, I like that.
I thought there was Sophia.
I don't know.
Maybe both.
No, I think you're right. I think it's Roman.
Yeah. Okay.
They have a similar vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is just a little more rough. And him and Jason mm-hmm. Schwartzman are besties,
mm-hmm.
Or were at the time. So he's in the movie also. And then, weird tangent, Colleen Camp is sort of like a B-list actress.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a ton of things in like the 90s, 2000s. And she was I worked receptionist at a hair salon in Beverly Hills at the time. And she was one of our customers and had like bought jewelry and stuff for me. Like, she's just a weird sort of eccentric Beverly Hills lady. She's Bill Murray's wife in this movie. And I was there being a background actor, and she didn't place me, even though we interacted with each other once a month for the last like 4 years. And all day I was waiting for Colleen to be like, hey, Ricky.
Uh-huh.
It was just a very awkward. Mm. It was a weird moment. Very small town.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was weird.
OK.
So she's also in this.
Uh-huh.
Check her out.
Okay.
But not the film we're showing on Sunday.
No, this has nothing to do with it. But which is also a weird, funny little movie, too. So,
yeah.
Yeah, The Shape of Trees.
The film is The Shape of Trees.
Yeah.
And it's showing on this Sunday at the Little Panada Theater.
Yes.
And how do you feel about the film? I'll direct that to Willie. Now that it's done, now that you've seen it, are you happy?
I'm thrilled. I'm so excited to get to show people. I'm mm-hmm. really proud of it. I hope everyone else that was involved is really proud of it. I hope people from Sandpoint are proud to see something that looks and feels cinematic and interesting and artful coming out of this town too. So
mm-hmm.
I'm really excited about it. And we're now going to start submitting it to film festivals. So crossing my fingers that kind of works out and it plays in some other places around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, so a little backstory, my wife and I have been working professionally as documentary filmmakers for over 15 years, and we both kind of started with a love of movies and a desire to get into video production of some kind, and kind of found our way into this career of making documentaries, but it's been in the back of our minds to do narrative fictional films, and so it's been an awesome, incredible, like, intense learning experience to actually script something, bring actors together, like rehearse, like stage shots, all of that. And I learned so much, like way more than I ever could have expected by making this weird little 15 minute mm-hmm. film
mm-hmm.
that at this point I'm like, yes, I'm super proud of it. I'm really excited for people to see it. And I just want to do it again because we just got to keep this momentum going. Like we learned so much. We've got like a cool little engaged group of people that is excited to make stuff together.
I think the one person we haven't mentioned yet is the other, collaborator. We all did everything on this movie, but Kevin Strickland, cinematographer, director of photography. Thank you.
Yeah, he's from Spokane. My wife and I met him while working on documentaries together. We worked together for years on documentaries in California. And in fact, I had been working with him for well over a year one day when after work we were at a bar and I learned that he was from Spokane, and I was like, wait, I'm from Sandpoint. And he was like, wait, what? And we've been working together in Orange County, California for a while, and so it was just this really funny connection. But he's back in Spokane now. Obviously, I'm here in Sandpoint, so to get to collaborate on something up here was really cool. And yeah, he brings a ton of skill and talent and just awesome eye behind the camera.
And I think your working relationship would translate into other future projects too, like the two of them working together and figuring out the shots and all of that kind of fun behind the scenes stuff was
definitely
was cool. They did a great job.
Yeah,
there was a point where Willie had to literally hold Kevin on a stump.
I don't remember that.
Do you remember at the prop when you were holding him in place so he could film through the truck door? Wasn't that weird?
Vaguely, man. Yeah, we got some shots. There is, yeah, that's
very
that's
romantic.
Right.
Yeah.
See, that's the kind of thing. It's just second nature to us. I'm like, hop on my shoulders.
Okay, we're going to take a short musical break and in return to talk again about the event coming up this Sunday and what the future might hold for the film The Shape of Trees. It, again, premieres, world premiere at the Little Panda Theater. On Sunday, doors open at 6 by donation, and you can check out that short film. We'll be back with Willie Zeller and Ricky Witte in just a minute. But first, a little music. On this date in 1974, this song was released. Not a huge hit at the time, would go on to be covered and become a huge hit in 1991.
What song is
it? I think.
Can't wait to find out.
I know.
Is it...
Guesses?
Is it the Harry Nilsson song that Mariah Carey covered? That those dates seem to cover...
What song is it? I was thinking I Will Always Love You. The
Ding, ding, ding.
No!
Okay. On this date... 40 years ago.
The Dolly Parton version is my favorite version. It's so good.
50 years ago, 1974, this song was released. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY. We'll be right back. Dolly Parton.
That is such a sweet version of that song. I love it so much.
It's the original.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't think I knew that until late in life.
Mm.
I think I thought it was either written for the film or I don't know.
You got to give Dolly her props. Also, I mean, the Whitney Houston version, it brings me to tears. It's magagical and perfect, but Dolly's is very sweet.
Without You, the Harry Nilsson song, I can't live if living is without you.
Mariah Carey had a hit with that
in the 90s.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So I wasn't too far.
That's a great song, too.
That is?
Yeah.
Lots of great songs out there, folks. Willie Zeller, the writer, director, and Ricky Witte, the producer or executive producer of The Shape of Trees, are here. The Shape of Trees is a short film premiering this Sunday at the Little Panda Theater at 6 o'clock, or at least doors open at 6 o'clock for the premiere event.
And there is limited seating because we're in the little theater.
It's the little one. Yeah,
there's about 80 seats available. That's why we're opening the doors a little early.
And we may or may not have some cookies available that are in the shape of trees.
Right. Notice how it's
spat out my coffee.
All in the shape of trees.
Yeah. I watched the trailer, as I mentioned, and I did do the Leo meme where you snap your fingers and point.
Oh, because you recognize.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
There's the Panda.
Yeah.
I did that a couple times.
It's heavily featured.
Yep.
I do want to point out, we didn't talk about this yet. The other person that we haven't mentioned is mm-hmm. our brother-in-law, Aaron Olson.
Yes.
Who did the soundtrack inadvertently.
Well, he's an incredible musician. He plays in multiple bands and scores music professionally for, you know, he's done some shows on Netflix, things like that. So we're really lucky that we were, that we're, one, related to him, and mm-hmm. that he was willing to donate his music. But he composed an album of solo music during the pandemic in 2020. He released it. And so we used that album as the score for this film, and it just worked perfectly. So, yeah, props to him. That's such a key component, music, and another thing that can typically be really expensive to do well. So it worked out.
Ricky just showed me a photograph of her standing in the background.
Yeah, my aunt just sent it to me.
Oh.
Screenshot from the film of me standing right behind Charlie Sheen. You can see half my face.
Uh-huh. Yes, and the hat, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
That's flashing back to that.
I forgot. I lied. I'm actually wearing, they're like a 6-inch. They're a very high Prada wedge that's black velvet. So I was not wearing, it's a very high shoe, but it wasn't the stilettos I thought I was wearing.
I feel like
very period appropriate
for listeners. Ricky was on a movie, and her experience of being on that movie inspired the movie that we're going to show on Sunday. I feel like we're talking about that so much. I'm like, wait, what are you? Yeah. Is Charlie Sheen in this movie?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a
totally different.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's talk. Just briefly, you mentioned that you both grew up here. Willie, what's your story? How did you come to?
Yeah.
What's your kind of experience as a filmmaker, and how did you come?
That's
to?
That's a great question.
Yes,
I mean,
come back here.
Growing up here, I was as a kid, one, obsessed with watching movies. I had all my favorite movies, I had them memorized. I remember in elementary school on the playground, my friends and I would be like quoting, you know, Adam Sandler movies or like Arnold Schwarzenegger movies and stuff. And I'd be like, that's not exactly how he said it. And then I realized, I'm like, oh, wait, I'm watching these a lot closer than other people. This is weird. Like, I know exactly every line. And anyways, I also started making movies at home, like camcorder style. All my friends and my sisters, they were in little movies. So we would remake movies. So I did at home remakes of Titanic, Braveheart,
Matrix.
The Matrix. Like, I would restage the scenes in our living room. And so I always had that kind of passion. But after high school, yada yada, a couple years go by, I'm doing construction, pretty typical story, like go straight into like manual labor. But I ultimately ended up in Orange County, California, and started an internship because I knew I wanted to work in video production in some way. And that internship just turned out to be such a, at a video production company, turned out to be such a serendipitous, perfect kind of alignment because I totally clicked with what they were doing. I got really excited about it. And fast forward a year later, they actually kind of put a camera in my hands and I was camera operating on a PBS documentary series. And I've been there ever since. So I've been working at this show called Road Trip Nation, producing documentaries for 16 years now. And it's been an amazing career. It's a long running PBS show. It's educational programming, mostly for high schoolers to help learn what kind of like career opportunities are out there. So we travel around the country interviewing people about their life and career paths. And I mentioned it earlier, but all these years of making documentaries has been awesome, and I've loved it. On the side, I have made a bunch of music videos and things like that, but more recently, it's just been like, you know what? We got to finally kind of change gears and kind of get back to the roots and like start making some actual cinematic stuff. And so that's where this project, The Shape of Trees, came from, is like first of hopefully many of just trying to make some fictional narrative stuff and see where it goes from here.
Yeah.
He also won a national Etch-a-Sketch competition.
Oh, yeah. I do Etch-a-Sketch art, believe it or not. Yes. And I was at one point, I was the world champion Etch-a-Sketch artist. That's true.
Yes. I've seen pictures of that.
Oh, okay.
Do you have one in your pocket or anything?
Oh, no.
An Etch-a-Sketch?
Usually there's an Etch-a-Sketch nearby.
A tiny one?
Yeah.
They have those.
He could do a real-time Jack portrait.
Yeah. I could.
Well... Yes, but you can't. And also, this is radio. Yeah. So what would be the point?
Speaking of stories you've told, sorry, Jack, over and over again, how many times have you given that spiel about what Road Trip Nation is in 16 years?
Oh, my gosh, a million.
Yeah.
Because we drive around the country in a big, bright green RV, a 36-foot motorhome. Mm-hmm. And so every time we stop for gas, every time we stop in the bathroom, you open the door and someone goes, man, what's this? And you're like, okay, here we go. Yeah. And sometimes we'll all look at each other and be like, who wants to tell the story this time?
Let's see. So you, we know then where the skill set came from to direct a film and the passion, and you were able to kind of assemble a crew from people who you had met in your career and personally.
Yeah.
What else goes into making your first, fictional or narrative feature?
Yeah.
Money, I would think.
Well, I mean, I think we made this on technically zero budget, but like Ricky mentioned, there's definitely some expenses that kind of came out of my pocket, like just, you know, the star of the film really graciously flew himself here and was like, no, this is on me. I want to be a part of it. So that's awesome. But like just making sure people that came from out of town had a place to stay, or like some of our actors who were like going out of their way, like got some money, that kind of thing. But really trying to bootstrap it. A lot of volunteering and just people being nice and getting involved. So
you think about a small budget film in Hollywood, like the Roman Coppola film was probably a couple million dollars to make.
Yeah.
Whereas this one was literally under $5,000.
Yeah.
Like, there was no money put into it.
Yeah.
In terms of Hollywood, even though it was actually a great personal expense.
And you asked how I feel about the film, especially with that considered. Yeah. I'm extremely proud of the look of it, because I feel like when you hit play on it, it looks and feels very cinematic regardless. Yeah. And so, I think that was just using all the tricks of the trade that we know of, lighting wise and, camera wise. Our director of photography owns a set of really nice lenses, which is huge. Like, all of that is just it's
honestly
critical.
The shots inside the Panada are so beautiful. Like, make that theater look remarkable.
I'm really proud of how those shots turned out, because the Panada is beautiful. And it's like, as we were in there playing around and shooting it, I was like, you know, I don't think I've seen it look quite like this before. And I'm stoked to get to like just look at this ceiling. Look at these walls. Like, it's so grand. And so that was great.
I'm curious to see the public's reaction to some of the shots, too. Like, I know the Shooks property so well, where we shot a lot of the outdoor scenes, that, like, that's all I see when I'm looking at this shot. I'm curious if other people will be able to
know where we are. No.
It'll be really interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. And then you called upon Ricky. Ricky, is there a story to how you got involved in the film other than just being his
We're related
sister?
To each other, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But right. Beyond that,
just
I
on
mentioned,
our mother and father's side.
Yeah. I mentioned that we made a music video together a couple years ago here, and I've long had the suspicion that Ricky would be a great producer, and I've worked with a lot of producers, like a lot of different producers, and I really understand the temperament and the skill set and... Beyond like having a degree in it or like studying it or whatever, there's just a certain personality that makes a great producer. And I always was like, Ricky, I think you're a producer. And so that music video was the first time that I was like, why don't you try helping me out with this? And like, sure enough, she's like making sure people are on set on time and that we got like places secured and like made the job really easy for me as a director. I'm like, that's it. That's what it is. So it was kind of, for me, it was kind of that. And then just getting to do it again on a slightly bigger scale with this short.
Yeah, that was kind of an Oprah aha moment for me, just sitting down talking to the crew toward the end of the shot or shoot. And I was like, I feel like I didn't do anything. Like, this was really easy for me. You guys did all the work. And they're like, no, that's because you did your job well. I was like, that's what that means. To me, it just sort of was second nature. I was just asking favors from people and I got them to do what I wanted.
Yeah, but for...
pretty easy for me.
For other people like myself, like creative people who like to be in their heads and think about stories and all of that, what you do is impossible and so labor intensive. Is like, I don't want to have to call everybody and like deal with all that like logistics. So
yeah, it was funny. I was doing a lot of this at my actual job, all the texting and arranging and phone calls, and it worked out because there was one scene where we were scrambling. We needed sort of a corporate-y looking older person.
Right.
And I work in an antique store and I just turned my head and I was like, oh, my boss. Let's just put her on film. And actually worked out last second. Yeah. Yeah, she actually was. She has a very, you know, naturally judgmental look. So it worked out really well.
How's it compare to being on, you've both been on other film sets, but this was the first time, I guess, you were really in charge.
Yeah.
How did that compare? How'd that feel?
I think every one of us were like, this is like the most fun that we've ever had. Yeah. And I kept describing it as it felt like filmmaking philosophy summer camp, because it was like a bunch of friends like camping out for a couple of weeks and watching movies together at night, and like in the morning around breakfast being like, what are we going to shoot today? Mm-hmm. Get excited about it. And then because the subject matter of the film is very philosophical, just having a lot of deep conversations about existence. And it was like, this is like the best. I wish I could just do this my whole life. So
that's the dream. I feel like actual shooting, Jamie brought a lot of the film set vibe. Like, she always had like the tape and the extra things and was keeping track of all the props. Yeah. Like, she really had that like brain that made it feel like we were actually shooting a movie and not just Willie and Kevin going off about pretty shots. There was a lot of that.
Yeah. Let's see. Who's the intended audience for this film, do you think?
I am excited about the prospect of submitting to film festivals, because I think film festival audiences are the intended audiences, because people who know who Terrence Malick is and are interested in Terrence Malick will especially appreciate the film. If you don't, that's okay. I think you'll still think it's funny. You'll find something to connect with. But I think film fans in particular are going to not only be excited by the story that we're telling in the movie, but they'll be able to pick up on the way that we were like homaging Terrence Malick's style. Like, we literally studied. Luckily, Terrence Malick's longtime cinematographer wrote like a manifesto for like how he achieves his style. And our director of photography and I like went over that and like checked. And we didn't shoot the whole film that way, but there's moments where we go full like Malick. And we would say it. We were like, okay, for this part, we're going full Malick, you know? And I think that the film fans out there will see that and appreciate it, or I hope so. But you know, it's a dark comedy. It's like a real subtle sort of like alternative kind of humor. And so I feel like anybody who's into, you know, art films or into just like that kind of sensibility is gonna enjoy it. And especially anyone who just like enjoys thinking about weird existential philosophy. Like there's a little bit of that dosed in there too. So
There's obviously not a rating. There's some adult language, but other than that, I think it's for all ages. Totally lost my train of thought. Oh, fun fact, behind the scenes, little BTS. I did not know that Terrence Malick was a real person until very close to actually shooting this film. It was like maybe the day before we started shooting. And I was like, so this might be a dumb question, but did you just make up Terrence Malick, or is he a real person? And then it was like crickets in the room. Yeah. Everyone was shocked.
Aghast.
Yeah. I still, to this day, have not seen a Terrence Malick film. I think at this point, out of They're stubbornness, like I just, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he featured, I mean, well, not Terrence Malick, of course, himself, but he is kind of he's referred to in the film and is central. Did you do any kind of reaching out to him, or?
You know, not yet, but speaking of producers, I have a producer friend who is adamant that I need to send him the film, and I'm like, I don't know, man. And he's like, send it to him. Like, who knows? Like, what if he would do a cameo for you? And I was like, that is wishful thinking. But I think at this point, now that it's done, and like, especially if it gets into a festival, I want to at least like make sure he knows it exists.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't talked to him about it at all. In fact, in the credits, you'll see it says Terrence Malick and Christian Bale were not involved in the making of this movie. Because we talk about Christian Bale in the movie too. But
I feel like they say you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah,
so we need to never know.
They do say that.
Stranger things have happened.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, well, what if he like sues you? What if he doesn't like it?
Well, there is that. And
too late now.
It's like, all right, it was a good run, you guys. Yeah. In fact, come see it at the Panada on Sunday, because you never know if it'll like even be able to air anywhere else.
We'll get a cease and desist.
Yes. Destroy
all prints. We are hoping there is a Sandpoint Film Festival. I looked up the website for that. We're hoping to at least get into that. So maybe this fall you'll be able to see it in the big theater.
I bet.
Screen.
Yes. I bet you will. That would be cool to see. Yes. On the big screen in the theater as its feet. Yeah.
Just putting a bit in for that now. You miss 100% of the shots.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. We mentioned that it's kind of for everybody, but there's some adult language in it. You can see it when and where?
Little Panda Theater.
Okay.
Right here in Sandpoint, Idaho, where it was shot and produced. And 6 p.m. this Sunday, June 9th.
With other events surrounding it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be an evening
with the filmmakers.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
That's very nice. Plus snacks. Possible.
Oh, yeah. I really want to make snacks. Some tree-shaped
cookies. Snacks. There will be concessions and bar available through the Panada. So that's provided always at Panada events. So we're not just leaving you high and dry if we don't make tree-shaped cookies. But hopefully there will be themed confections.
Okay. Well, you got today's Thursday. You got Friday, Saturday. You might get some
tree-shaped
cookies made.
Yeah.
Okay. yes. anything else we need to mention about the movie or the event before we sign off and I go on to?
I did tell everyone that I personally invited that the suggested attire is casual cocktail. I don't know if that makes any difference to anybody in Sandpoint at all, but I just appreciate when people put effort into their look.
There you go.
As a producer.
Yeah.
Okay. Casual cocktail attire. Trying to get people to do what I want. Yeah.
Well, what would that be exactly?
We've talked about this. I think I've decided on I'm going to wear just black jeans and t-shirt, but with a tuxedo jacket.
Mm.
And then maybe like glitzier accessories. I did actually Google like independent film producers at Sundance, like what they wear. And it's a little more casual than that. Like they're trying to look way too cool.
Yeah.
So I'm dressing it up a little bit with a tuxedo jacket. Well, I mean, it's Sandpoint. Be comfortable. I'm not going to turn anyone away at the door. I'm just saying, let's make it a fun event. Let's get a little dressed.
All right.
Yeah, I think I'm like William, a lot
who
of
are
dudes.
You wearing?
Who am I wearing? I don't even own that many. I don't even have options. So Ricky was like, "What are you wearing?" I'm like, "I have sweaters and I have a couple flannels. So I'll probably put on one of the flannels." You know, so that's my version.
According to the weather report, it's going to be thunderstorms that day. So
I did say that, didn't I?
Yeah,
out loud.
Yeah,
could happen.
You aired it live.
Could also be warm. We shall see. But it's going to be fun. It could be historic. This could be the first, this could be the premiere of the very first film in a long and storied career. You don't even know.
It's true.
Could be.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Don't want to miss that.
I wouldn't want to miss that. Not for the world. we'll play a little music. I'll be back and tell you about what else is going on this weekend here in town. Willie Witty Zahler is the writer and co-director.
That's right.
Okay. And Ricky Witty is the executive producer, or just the producer.
Maybe.
Of The Shape of Trees, premiering this Sunday at the Little Panada Theater. Here's a song. It's not from the film, but there's a Terrence Malick movie called Badlands. Here's Bruce Springsteen. We'll be right back.